Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, a standoff on the Hill to fund or not to fund the government. Former Republican House Majority Leader Eric Cantor on suspending the debt ceiling and roadblocks in the Senate.
There's no question that the Democrats have a path out of this, and I believe in the end are going to take care of this.
And make the most of your Amex. The points guy, Brian Kelly, has tips for smart charges to your credit card.
I've actually noticed that frequent flyer miles have become more valuable because they give more flexibility. If you want to cancel that trip for whatever reason, you can get all your miles back.
Those stories plus Fed Chair Jay Powell speaks and inside Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes' trial and her private text messages. CNBC's Yasmin Coram has all the details.
These text messages paint a picture of Elizabeth Holmes that we all knew, a cool, confident CEO. It's completely different than the Elizabeth Holmes we are seeing inside and outside this courthouse.
It's Thursday, September 23rd, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. We're going to start with the markets this morning. The Dow jumped by 338 points yesterday. That broke a four-day losing streak. It also posted its best daily performance since July 20th. The jump came right after the Fed's announcement. Andrew?
Thanks, Becky. Meantime, stocks closing higher after that Fed indicated that rate hikes could be coming sooner than expected and that it would start pulling back on some of the stimulus it's been providing, although it didn't give a specific timeline. Now, the central bank also significantly, this important, cut its economic outlook for the year. Here are some key moments from Fed Chair Powell's news conference.
Demand for labor is very strong, and job gains averaged 750,000 per month over the past 3 months. In August, however, job gains slowed markedly, with the slowdown concentrated in sectors most sensitive to the pandemic, including leisure and hospitality. I guess my own view would be that the test, the substantial further progress test for employment, is all but met. While no decisions were made, participants generally view that, so long as the recovery remains on track, a gradual tapering process that concludes around the middle of next year is likely to be appropriate. The bottlenecks and shortages that we're seeing in the economy have really not begun to abate in a meaningful way yet.
A lot of questions that the journal notes that had to be asked about insider trading. I guess someone had to ask them. But across the middle of the country, where people that had small wage gains recently, but inflation eating away, maybe more questions about inflation, or maybe that is something that would be more front of mind for most people about what the Fed is doing and keeping assets so high, which adds to income inequality and everything else. So, I mean, you got to ask those questions, I guess. And people love a good, you know, oh, these guys, they're, what would you call them? They're in a privileged position, so they got privileged information, so they're all a bunch of rich fat cats, and, you know, these are the guys in the government, it's all the swamp. But what we really ought to be worried about is what they're doing, not holding muni bonds, but what they're doing in terms of what could be a monetary mistake.
I think the soundbite we just played from him, that last one, talking about how they haven't begun to abate, the inflationary signs haven't begun to abate in any meaningful way. Is that a step back and kind of an acknowledgement that maybe this is not as transitory, the inflation, as we'd originally anticipated?
I think it is. And I think eventually, I think years from now, we will look back at, and we will show that video.
And by we, I mean them.
but we will show that video of them making the transitory claim. And I think it's going to turn out to be in a different place, don't you think?
I just, once again, anecdotally, the chip shortage is real.
Right.
I mean, you cannot buy, like, I'm still, I don't know. I
got a meeting
my
at the White House.
My car is somewhere in frickin' Germany. It's, you know, it's like may eventually leave the port. I got to turn my old car in anyway, so I don't know. I'm going to be Yeah, walking?
But then the question is the supply chain is a big deal, and what about housing? That could be a transition.
What happened to housing? Why is no one buying houses? Because I think not because the demand is down. I think that there's no supply. So people have given up and prices are too high. So that would reflect inflation, too.
And I think FedEx, if you looked at their earnings report, I think this was a big sign of it. Because when I read through what they were saying, just that they have to pay so much more for labor right now and there are still labor shortages and that it's not going away anytime soon. I mean, once you start paying more for these employees to come in, I don't see that unwinding
less,
at some point either.
I feel bad for the car dealers. This guy said that this is, you know, we thought we were going to have some hard rain. This has been a hurricane that we've been dealing with in terms of no product to be able to people come in. You came with.
Yeah, but some of these guys are selling it, you know, 30% over sticker.
Used cars, not new, you can't get any new cars.
No, but you want a new. I'm saying new 30% over sticker. Used cars, the margin. Right. So I'm not crying at the moment. Where's my friend from Carvana?
You can cry for me, please.
Okay, for you.
Carless.
Yes. No, if you want to buy a refrigerator or a couch.
By Friday,
Yeah, it's a problem.
Yesterday, the FDA authorized the Pfizer COVID booster shot for people 65 and older. Remember the FDA panel said that would be okay. Other vulnerable Americans, immune compromised or with underlying conditions, six months after they have completed their first two doses. That means many Americans would be eligible to receive the shots now. And digging into that vulnerable term, the agency used a broad definition, including people who have medical conditions that place them at the risk of getting severely sick, and people who have frequent institutional or occupational exposure. That opens the door for frontline workers, for the CDC to potentially clear third doses for people in nursing homes, prisons, frontline health workers, and other essential employees who were among the first to get the initial shots last December. And the CDC could give final approval for the booster shots to proceed at a vote scheduled for this afternoon. But just like we saw, the original EUA was enough for a lot of people. I don't know, but I think we need to do Moderna. Half the people got Moderna instead of Pfizer. Where there's no boosters for Moderna. But
that's going to be in a couple of weeks. They'll have their data.
You may not need them as much.
Moderna is just not done with the data yet. I think that that will be probably cleared in the near future, too.
Yeah.
No, it appears to be a little bit more durable. So maybe you get a couple months extra out of it. I don't know. We'll see. But
we'll
also
see the
interesting part about the booster shot that Moderna is creating is it's actually a different amount in the booster. So right now the Pfizer booster
is the same amount as the second shot.
Right. The Moderna booster is going to be some fraction of what the of what the other one was.
And I guess that leads to not only does the data have to be come before the FDA and they have to clear it, but that would mean that you would then need to get different shots out to distribute it to all of these places.
Right. Makes it a little the doing it the way Moderna is doing it will make it more complicated. It may be the right way to do it, but it does. Former Theranos CEO Elizabeth Holmes is on trial defending herself against 12 counts of wire fraud and conspiracy to commit wire fraud. CNBC has obtained thousands of private text messages between Holmes and her COO and then boyfriend, Sonny Balwani. Now, I want to get straight over to CNBC producer Yasmin Khorum, who's been in the courtroom every day of this trial and obtained these text messages. So tell us what's in them.
Andrew, I obtained thousands of text messages between Elizabeth Holmes and Sonny Balwani. These text and Skype messages span from 2011 to 2016, which we know is when their relationship, both personally and professionally, ended when he left Theranos. Let me paint a picture of what these text messages show about Elizabeth Holmes. They show she was a very confident CEO. Let's take the first example from 2014. Elizabeth Holmes texts Sonny Balwani, "Total confidence in myself. Best business person of the year." Sonny responds to her, "Awesome. You are listening and paying attention." Another example, Elizabeth is boasting about the money that's flowing in from the Theranos investors. She texts Sonny, "Just finished calls. Alice Walton in for 50. Alice Walton is, of course, of the Walmart fame. The Walton family ended up investing about $150 million into Theranos. Sonny responds to this text message, "They are not investing in our company. They are investing in our destiny." That, of course, is a much different destiny than what ended up happening. As you mentioned, they're fighting a dozen charges. very serious charges and potential prison time. I do have to add that I did reach out to attorneys for Balwani and attorneys for Holmes. They declined to comment.
Okay, so Yasmin, what does this tell us, though, about her and her defense case in terms of how she's going to want to paint herself? Does this help or hurt her?
You know, it could go both ways. These text messages paint a picture of Elizabeth Holmes that we all knew, a cool, confident CEO. But I have to tell you, Andrew, that it's completely different than the Elizabeth Holmes we are seeing inside and outside this courthouse. I've been covering this case for 3 years, and she has been silent. We throw her questions outside as she's walking in. She ignores all of them. In fact, I've jumped in the elevator with her and her attorneys before and tried to chat her up, and she doesn't say anything. Their MO is clearly to keep her silent, which is a complete contrast to the Elizabeth Holmes you and I saw just years ago, making the media rounds, appearing on every magazine, appearing on these television networks. It really begs the question, who is the real Elizabeth Holmes?
But Yasmin, does the timeline go to the point where any of the text messages say, wait a minute, you're telling me that this doesn't work and that the entire technology that we've built the company on is a fraud? Is there anything like that? I mean, confidence is great, but is there any indication that she knew that it was all built on a house of cards? None of it was real. None of that?
They do talk about some issues with their Edison blood testing technology. They don't text about anything related to fraud, but they do mention about issues within the company. They mention about some exits of employees. They mention about some turmoil within the company. They talk about the former Wall Street Journal reporter John Carreyrou and him, you know, getting talking to these employees within the company and how they can squash that. They do bring up these issues.
Did the CEO not know? It doesn't, or maybe the CEO didn't know that the technology didn't work. Is that that would be my defense, I guess.
There is the paper trail that shows that she was aware. The government has.
Right.
Evidence,
but Yasmin, there's nothing in the text that betrays the idea that she is nervous at any point or anxious at any point that the technology isn't working or that they have to use these other testing machines to verify or in some cases just do the test unto itself.
Yeah, there's text messages that show that, you know, they were worried. There's one that Sunny sends to Elizabeth that actually came out in, you know, government testimony that said the Normandy lab is a expletive disaster. So they knew that there were issues, definitely.
Yasmin, I've seen some of the texts too. You know, the defense that we've heard at this point is that, you know, Sunny Balwani was the one who was controlling things and that she was under his thumb with some of those things.
That is going to be probably one of their defense strategies. We all saw the bombshell documents that were unsealed a few weeks ago. Elizabeth Holmes is claiming some very serious things. She says that Sunny Balwani abused her both mentally and physically. It's allegations that Sunny Balwani categorically denies. I looked through, you know, 600 pages of these text messages, and what I saw were text messages between two individuals who are in a relationship. But again, these messages are only one piece of the puzzle. And as you guys know, this is a very big puzzle. And it's going to put, if Elizabeth does take the stand, it's going to be a monumental moment because we really have not heard from Elizabeth Holmes, you know, her side of the story.
Yasmin, it is great to see you. We appreciate you walking us through this and reporting on this as diligently as you have. And we're looking for updates and progress. And boy, is it a courtroom drama. So thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, the clock is ticking again on the country's debt ceiling. Former Majority Leader Eric Cantor on the congressional calculus.
I don't believe we're going to see either a shutdown or a default.
And we've seen this movie before.
Everybody reverses depending on where they sit. That's what happens every time. There's sort of a sick hypocrisy to it.
I will actually agree with you there, but
there are good things to spend money on.
Two wrongs do not make a right.
More Squawk Pod after this.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Stand Joe by.
This is Squawk Pod with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Joe.
The debt limit drama has Wall Street plotting out some worst-case scenarios and some big risks to the economy. Ilan Mui joins us now with more. Hey, Ilan.
Oh, good morning, Joe. Goldman Sachs is calling the current debt limit showdown the riskiest in a decade. Analysts there project the Treasury Department would face a $500 billion shortfall for October and November if Congress does not raise the debt ceiling. Now, that would trigger a 40% cut in federal spending, potentially including interest payments, Social Security checks, and military pay. Now, even just a delay in increasing the limit could be damaging as well. In a letter to Congress yesterday, six former Treasury secretaries said, quote, postponing action to raise the debt limit until too close to the deadline undermines confidence in our political system at home and abroad. Now, it is important to note that both Democrats and Republicans agree that default would be catastrophic and that the debt ceiling should be raised. What they're fighting over is who should actually do it.
Don't play Russian roulette with our economy. Step up and raise the debt ceiling to cover all that you've been engaged in all year long.
Now, complicating everything is that the debt limit is now tied to government funding, which runs out in just 1 week. Now, this is similar to what happened in 2013, and Moody's estimated that 16-day shutdown reduced GDP by about $20 billion, or roughly half a percentage point of growth at the time. So, guys, the worst-case scenarios are clearly bad, but even the medium-case scenarios don't look so great either. Joe?
All right, Ilan, thank you. This next person may know something about this. Now for a closer look at the debt ceiling showdown on Capitol Hill and the potential impact on the markets and investors, let's welcome Eric Cantor, former House Majority Leader, now Moelis & Company Vice Chairman and Managing Director. Eric, I mean, $3.5 trillion is a lot, so I understand the Republicans. If you have the House, the Senate, and the President, don't you have the ability under reconciliation to do this yourself? What's the problem? Could they do it under reconciliation?
Short answer is absolutely yes, they can. And that's been Mitch McConnell's point all along for the last couple of months. It's not as if he has not put the Democrats on notice that the Republicans on Capitol Hill, because they've not been a part at all of the Biden administration and the Democrats' push to spend all this money, he has said early on, Mitch has said, hey, we are not going to participate in increasing the debt limit. So again, all the people who are getting all nervous, I mean, I get this is serious stuff. You know, first of all, Joe, remember, I mean, we have been and seen this movie before. I've participated in the movie before in 2011 and 2013. There's no question that the Democrats have a path out of this, and I believe in the end are going to take care of this. I think what the reticence is there's a few things that are standing in the way here. One is they have procedurally put themselves in a box, and it's going to take them time to get out of that box, which of course slows down the march towards trying to get through their $3.5 trillion spending bill. But they can decouple the debt ceiling from the continuing resolution, which is the stopgap measure to continue the funding of government so there won't be a shutdown. They can do that. And Mitch McConnell and the Republicans have said that Republicans will help support keeping the government open, just don't tie it to a debt ceiling. Again, it's just a procedural thing that will take a lot of time. The second issue is very interesting that, you know, when it comes to the debt limit, so let's say that they're going to separate out the debt limit and have a separate vote on that. I don't believe that they're going to, well, they've got two options, the Democrats. They could put the debt ceiling provision in their large $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. The problem with that is I don't think they're going to be resolved on all those issues by the time the need for that arises in mid to late October. So their other option is to have a separate reconciliation bill aimed just at increasing the debt ceiling. The issue there is if you put a debt ceiling provision in reconciliation, the Democrats have to cite a sum specific as to the amount of indebtedness they'll have to incur, again, which goes back to the Democrats' disarray, which they can't decide. Is it $3.5 trillion? Is it $1.5 trillion, $2 trillion? So that's sort of what's behind their reluctancy to do that. At the end of the day, back to your question, they will take care of this. I don't believe we're going to see either a shutdown or a default.
They can take care of it without Republicans doing anything, can they not?
That is correct. Well, the Republicans have to join them in funding the government because, as you know,
that's not an issue, you said at this point.
No, I think Mitch McConnell has already said they're going to help. So the Republicans will help do that. Yes.
Harkening back to what you said, you've been through it before. I had forgotten about that. You and Boehner and President Obama had a grand bargain, a big deal, all ready to go. And now the narrative has changed. One side says that that you talked Boehner into walking away. The other side says that President Obama changed the entire deal after you already had an agreement. Is that a matter of opinion, or are there facts? Are there alternate facts?
So the other piece of that is Joe Biden was a central part to that as well, which was a very different Joe Biden than we see going on today, because he was the one who, you know, I met with the Biden Commission three times a week for about 7 or 8 weeks. And we really made a lot of progress in accomplishing some spending cuts, which over the next successive years allowed the budget deals to continue, because those spending cuts actually took the place of what happened back with the time that you referred to on the sequester. But yes, I think there was a little bit of all of that, Joe, that, you know, President Obama changed the deal, as well as in the Republican ranks way back then. We didn't have the votes for any notion of what President Obama wanted at the time. As you remember, back then, you know, my party wanted to transform the entitlement so we could actually regain some fiscal integrity. And there was just not a meeting of the minds on how to do that between us and the Obama administration.
Yeah, it's not why you got primaried, is it? We can't go in. We can't relitigate all this stuff.
We don't need to go.
You're in a better place.
I'm good. Absolutely.
So it sounds like one of the things the Democrats don't want to do is show their hand on the 3.5 versus 2 versus 1.5. What will Manchin go for? And you know, it's not just Manchin and Sinema. There's some moderates in the House, theoretically. They folded pretty quickly last time. But, you know, the party, would you say that the disarray in the Democratic Party is what's responsible for the not being able to raise the debt limit? That's where we are.
That is exactly where we are, because, I mean, they're going to have to get over, you know, this difference or lack of agreement on the amount of that spending bill in order to raise the debt ceiling. Because, as I said before, they'll have to provide for a specific amount if it's in a reconciliation measure. But I think also what's driving the disarray is the prospect for increased taxes. I mean, I always go back to this, Joe. You know, the seat I used to represent was the most Republican in the Commonwealth of Virginia and is now held by a Democrat. And the current member of Congress, I can assure you, is not excited at all in raising taxes. That is a death knell to anyone sitting in that seat. So I think that, to your point, there are moderate Democrats. Yes, they have caved in terms of giving Pelosi more time. But I don't think that those suburban seats that they're in right now, I don't think those constituents want to see their member of Congress vote to increase taxes.
Eric, that's what I was going to ask you about. Did those moderate Democrats cave? Because it looks like they got sort of what they asked for, which is they wanted the separation of the big infrastructure bill, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, from whatever you want to call it, the social infrastructure $3.5 trillion bill. They wanted a separate standalone vote on that, and they wanted that to be taken care of without consideration for whether or not they would go ahead and vote on the second. It looks like Nancy Pelosi said, okay, we'll vote on that by the 27th, which is Monday. And maybe it sounds like they're still sticking to that, even knowing that they don't have the other bill ready to go. Did they cave, or is this they cut a deal and we'll see if leadership sticks with that deal and whether they go along with it if they don't?
Well, it depends on what the conversation was as to whether there was really a deal there, because if Pelosi just committed to bringing the bill up on the 27th, so we've got that coming next week, and that was it, then they'll have to make the decision whether it's even a smart move to execute on that deal. Because I can tell you as a leader, you do not want to bring up a piece of legislation and have it go down on the floor. That creates all kinds of precedent votes and the rest. It is not an easy thing to overcome once you do that.
So you don't think she has the votes on that net yet?
No, absolutely not. No, because the Republicans are not going to join in any scheme that helps the Democrats enact one of the largest tax increases ever and spend trillions of additional dollars. So then Pelosi's got to deal with her progressive caucus, and they've already said that they've got enough votes to block. Now, I'm not sure about their whip count, but I don't know if I were Pelosi, I wouldn't take that risk because of the ramifications of putting a bill on the floor that's going to go down.
All right, Eric Cantor, thank you. I thought, Andrew, I thought you were going to talk to him about it. He looked unhappy when you were talking about Obama and Boehner. Right? I thought you were going to get involved with something. I don't think he really said anything bad about Obama. You want to talk to him about anything? Or
I'm cool.
You sure? Did he have his facts wrong or something?
No,
or?
I don't think he had his facts wrong. Okay.
I was nervous, Eric.
Yeah, I will say with this. I'm going to make one comment.
Okay, I welcome it. Okay.
My comment is that when Republicans are in power,
they
everybody's willing
that.
To spend. When Democrats are in power, the whole thing, everybody reverses depending on where they sit.
Eric,
that's what happens every time. There's sort of a sick hypocrisy to it.
Hey, funding the defense, number one, we need, in a world, to be said, and cutting corporate taxes to make them globally competitive so we can compete around the world and hire people and succeed economically is different than throwing.
There
are good things to spend money on.
Two wrongs do not make a right. I do not support the idea of spending too much money. I find it completely hypocritical that depending on who's sitting in the seat,
so
everybody's willing to spend money or not spend money. I think we need to run a balanced budget. I absolutely do.
I'm talking about the doubling the entire debt of all his predecessors that Obama orchestrated. Obama's predecessors, I said. He doubled the debt of every previous president, and we had the worst recovery since World War II.
Over this prior administration, I did not hear complaints from this side about this about too much spending.
You need a strong defense, and you need a competitive corporate sector, right, Eric? Thanks, Eric.
I think you need all those things, but I think you can do it.
Think you need cradle to grave entitlements for the 50-year wet dream of the.
I did not defend that position. Oh, no. You're not hearing me defend that position.
How much do you want to spend? $3.5 or how much do you want to spend on the human infrastructure?
I would probably spend materially less, but we can have a longer conversation about that.
Cheese will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, the points guy. Whether you've got an itch to travel or ready for some retail therapy, Brian Kelly has the smartest ways to use rewards points that may have been piling up during the pandemic.
If you've got credit card points, transfer them to airlines. There can be amazing deals out there.
News you can use, and the points, too, right after this.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
We're back. This is Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Becky Quick and Joe Kernan. More travelers are returning to the skies and airline points and miles deals, they are changing, which might mean your rewards are becoming, yep, less valuable. Joining us right now is an expert on all things airline points. Brian Kelly is the CEO of The Points Guy, and we talk about inflation a lot. Maybe there's inflation going on or deflation with miles. What are we going to do here, Brian?
You know, it's not all bad news. There are some silver linings to the pandemic. Most frequent flyer programs have now made it easier to change or cancel tickets. So I've actually noticed that frequent flyer miles have become more valuable because they give more flexibility. If you want to cancel that trip for whatever reason, you can get all your miles back. But certainly, you know, it varies by program. But what I would tell people is if you've got credit card points, transfer them to airlines. There can be amazing deals out there.
Okay, but let's talk about it. So for those of us who actually like to do the math and think we're clever in arbitraging what's happening here, where are the points the most valuable? When should we be, what's a mile worth today? When are we getting a good deal? When are we getting a bad deal? When should we actually use the miles? When should we wait?
So look, the best is still international business class. Next week, I decided last minute to go to Paris, New York to Paris, Air France. There is award availability like I've never seen in my lifetime. 10 tickets, 115,000 miles round trip business class. I checked, it was an $8,000 flight. So airlines are still charging a huge premium for business class on many routes, but it's a screaming deal when you use miles. So I got nearly 9 cents per point in value from my Amex points because Amex now has 12 transfer partners. Air France was a 25% bonus. So instead of using 115,000 points, I use only 90,000 for round-trip business class. So if you have the appetite to travel abroad, going to Europe business class, this is the best time of year to go, too. There's, you know, far fewer tourists than in the past. But Delta, you know, even domestically, they just came out with the fare sale. They want you to use your miles. We saw Delta's charging as low as 6,000 sky miles one way for Seattle, New York. Just one example.
So you're arguing right now, which of the airlines you think have the best deals, which have the worst?
You know, I think when you look at the value of Alaska Airlines has really valuable miles. United is a top contender. But it really just depends. Each airline has its, bright spots.
What about credit cards? Are you an Amex guy? Are you a Chase guy?
You know, Amex and Chase are neck and neck. Amex has more partners. Chase has some more valuable ones like transfer partners like Hyatt. So it really just depends. But Amex and Chase points, you can't go wrong.
But the trick is, and we've got to talk about this, you got to transfer the points from the card directly to the airline rather than go through the card program. Correct?
Absolutely. You know, for example, Chase just added Aeroplan, which is Air Canada's loyalty program. It's only 70,000 miles one way to go business class anywhere in the U.S. to Europe. You know, if you book through their portal, you're going to get $700, maybe $900 ticket. So you're flying coach if you book directly. But if you figure out the transfer game, you can fly for the same amount or less in business class. That's where the real value is.
Here's the thing I've never understood about the transfer game. Why is the deal so much better in the transfer game? And is the issue that once you transfer, you can never go back?
Correct. Once you transfer to an airline, you can't say, oh, I want my Chase points back and try to reverse it.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Let's get very practical because I think a lot of people who are watching have dealt with this before. You can't actually book the flight before you have the miles in the account. So sometimes there's this little chicken and egg problem. Do you know what I'm talking about here?
There is. Some airlines, if you call, they will hold an award. We've got a blog post at the Points Guy airline loyalty programs that will let you do that. But there is a level of risk. And exactly to your point, where there's high risk, there's high reward. And that's how it works with loyalty programs. If you transfer, there could be changing availability. But in general, once you educate yourself on how to, you know, transfer your credit card points to airlines, you can get tremendous value. One example, Emirates is now adding back up to 90% capacity starting in November from their U.S. gateways. You can fly to Dubai for 132,000 miles one way in first class, a $10,000 ticket. So, you know, there are huge rewards for those who can take on the
risk.
And
is anybody out there right now actually just buying miles from people? I mean, there was sort of a marketplace for that, right?
At some point. I don't recommend it. If you buy, you know, a lot of, if you see Google ads, you know, half off business class. Generally, what those people are doing is buying frequent flyer miles and booking you tickets. The airlines find out they can not only cancel your flight, but take all of your miles away. So I do not recommend that. One last thing, I think over the pandemic, people have had tons of miles because they haven't traveled. We have the Points Guy app now, which will actually give you your net worth. It'll track all your major airline miles and credit card points. And I think it's important for people to visualize how many miles they have and don't let them keep racking up. Over time, they will lose value. So use your miles. There's no better time to do it.
Brian, appreciate seeing you. It's fun. I've been following you for so long, and I constantly click on that website. So I'm glad to see you. Appreciate it. We'll hope to see you again soon.
That's Squawk Pod for today. Thanks for tuning in. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern to get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears. Listen and follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Tell a friend, tweet us, all that good stuff. And we'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.